on the injured label, calling card, Arthur Blythe on alto saxophone, John Hicks piano, Cecil McBee on bass, Bobby Battle on the drums, Naima's Love Song, written by the late John Hicks, and started off way back when with Contemplation from Blythe Spirit, and I put all the info away, so I won't go over it, but it was in 1981 with Arthur Blythe on alto saxophone. I think Kelvin Bell on guitar, Bob Stewart on tuba, Abdul Wadu on the cello, and Bobby Battle on drums. See, I did that from memory. That's pretty good. All right, Ishwari will be up after this important word. Everyone have a good evening. You're listening to WMBR Cambridge.
Hi, friends. Have you ever seen other people experiencing interstate highway ditch and thought, that could be me? Well, now, thanks to modern realities of speed and distraction, interstate highway ditch can be yours. Here's how. Next time you're in a car and the driver's driving recklessly, simply say nothing. That's right. Let them speed around corners and drift across lanes. Ignore that little feeling in the pit of your stomach, and you too can experience interstate highway ditch. Interstate highway ditch has been associated with rollovers, passenger ejection, and death, and therefore may not be suitable for everyone. Passengers who wish to avoid interstate highway ditch can do so by following simple steps, like trusting their instincts, speaking up, and telling their friends to slow down.
In the real world, there is no spokesperson to prevent reckless driving. There's only you. Speak up.
Act now. Paramedics are standing by.
This has been a message from the Ad Council. For more information, go to youarethespokesperson.com. This land of yours, your homeland, it's calling to you, and the bond that you share with it is one that can never be broken. These were the opening lines of the song that we just heard, a snippet of Ye Jo Desh Hai Tera from the Bollywood film, a Hindi language film by the name of Swades. It's a powerful set of words, and it's going to lead us into a powerful message on today's episode of Post-It Wall. So good evening, everyone. This is Aishwarya signing on from WMBR here in Cambridge, back for this week's broadcast of Post-It Wall. Our goal here is to show you that the world around you is a canvas and it's colored by stories, painted delicately by the human experience, and all you have to do is listen. This week, I have yet another colorful story to add to our wall. Our guest this week is a new friend of mine, a fellow first-year graduate student at the MIT Media Lab, a solid guitarist, a formative cricketer, and an accomplished human-computer interactions researcher. But most importantly, he's an individual committed to giving back by mentoring younger students, and I'm one of them, and by working on initiatives meaningful to the community that he came from. That's a place quite far from here. But before I introduce him to you and before I let him do the talking to tell his story, I have to begin with the show's most infamous question. So, mystery person who's sitting in front of me, if you could leave behind one bit of advice for me, for all our listeners, for the rest of the world, what would that be?
But thank you for having me here. One bit of advice. I think if you're trying to do research or if you're trying to do something in your society that is against the norm, then you will face a lot of resistance. But if you focus on result, then you will never enjoy the journey. So this tough process, you need to enjoy the journey and think about it as growing process for yourself and people mm-hmm. around you. So that's the bit of advice I will give, is like enjoy the journey that you're walking rather than worrying about the results. Because if you're passionate about something, you will make it happen over the period of time. So question is, can you work on something which takes longer to get success? Success is not coming in shorter form, because anything hard that you want to do is going to take time. It's going to be hard, because if it is easy, then everybody else will do it. So,
mm-hmm. Great. So I heard a lot of things here. I heard there's a target that you're aiming for, and it seems like targets keep coming at you, but don't just sit there waiting for the result or keep trying for the result, but instead enjoy the path that you took to get you there. Can you kind of, that's sort of a high-level abstract thing, can you maybe give us an example of something from your own life or otherwise?
Yeah, sure. So I come from a very small town in India where there is not access to electricity or even pure water to drink. The access to information or computers was very not reachable. So mm-hmm. While growing up in that context, first time I actually learned about MIT was a trash of paper somebody thrown out. And wow. It had interview of Dr. Amar Bose, who was a professor at MIT, who mm-hmm. graduated from MIT. And that story really touched me. Someone who is an educator, someone who is an entrepreneur, someone who wants to solve engineering problems and help society. And then at the time, I thought, oh, MIT seems pretty cool place to go to. And then I figured out my way, which is pretty hard, because when you don't have proper guidance or no information available, you need to navigate the path yourself. But mm-hmm. if you believe in your dream, then no matter how hard the path is, you can enjoy the journey. Because if you, for example, I loved math, I like science, and even there were no resources, I figured out and find people who helped me along. Mm-hmm. So while you're enjoying the journey, the most important part is like stay humble and appreciate the people in your life, because no one succeeds alone. Even many successful people, there are their family behind them, their friends behind them, their society, their people around them, professors, teachers, they play a huge role in individual success. And I think having that support in life is very important. And designing that ecosystem around you and staying positive when things are not going in your way is the most important thing. Because, as I said, if you don't enjoy the process, then you're going to give up. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to hate the process, and somewhere you're going to get distracted and you're going to find easy way out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you sort of told us, we're getting pieces and pieces of this journey of yours, and I really want people to hear more of it and where it started and how you ended up here. But first things first, you forgot to mention your name. So in front of me, I have Neil Gaikwad. You can say your full name, actually, if you'd like to.
Yeah, my name is Nehal Kumar Gaikwad, which is the longer name. But my friends call me Neil because it's easier and shorter.
Mm-hmm. Makes our life a little bit easier, too. And you're a fellow graduate student, first year here at the MIT Media Lab. But let's roll back the tape many, many years. So where did this all start? Where are you from? And what are sort of all of the different phases you took maybe in your career, even before you ended up at different universities in the U.S. and then finally at MIT? And what kept you going?
Sure. So as I said, my journey started at a small town called Nevasa, which is in Ahmednagar district in India. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful part of Western Ghats, which is mountaineer, a lot of mountains and biodiverse area. Wow. Of the region. So my journey actually started with books that my parents got, because my parents always believed in education as a very important investment. And so I was focused on my studies and figuring out on my own like what needs to be done to to go from one step to other step. But I always had a goal, like to come here or to help society using technology. Because I was seeing problems around me, like people don't have access to drinking water, or people don't have access to electricity, or even you have schools, they don't have computers. So question is like, how can you use that experience and design technologies for that? So that was the goal. And that led me to do engineering because I believe engineers are born to build. And you build to solve societal problems, not just write academic papers. Your goal is to, how can I take research in the lab to the real world, whether it's in the United States or whether it's in other part of the world. So scientists need to be motivated by that thought. So that's how my journey started. And I luckily got good teachers and professors who guided me through. So then I went to Carnegie Mellon. I did research there. We worked on a project called Eterna, which is a crowd computing game now used by 100,000 people all over the world. And it helps solve some of the most challenging problems in biochemistry and helps invent new form of medicines. Since I was working on Wall Street during that time, but I kept doing my research, and I was lucky enough to work with Professor Michael Bernstein, who was also a graduate from MIT CSL. So that collaboration and his mentorship and support really helped me learn and grow as a researcher. So that's where I go back and learn, like, people around you are very important because they train you, and they believe their belief is very important. So, but at the same time, there are a lot of people who admire and like look up to. They will give you wrong advices, or they will tell like this will not work. But at that time, you need to believe in yourself and keep going rather than stopping, because there are a lot of people who will tell this is not possible. But it's a lot of fun to do things that people tell you not possible and go and accomplish them.
Got it. So, born and brought up in Maharashtra, and then ended up here in the U.S., went to Carnegie Mellon, worked with faculty from Stanford, and now at MIT. That's quite an amazing trajectory, if you think about it. So, that brings me to another question that I want to ask you. You've achieved great feats, and you're still going forward. So, on this journey, what do the words humility and gratitude mean to you? You touched upon it a little bit, but are those important things, and can you tell us why?
Sure. So I was a sportsman, and we always believe that the success comes because of there are a lot of people around you. It's not individual success. I played cricket, which is a team sport, and no individual can win you matches unless and until it is a team effort. And no individual can go on the stadium and perform well unless and until he has strong support from his surrounding. For example, family or friends or, of course, he needs to believe in himself first. But at the same time, that other ecosystem is very important. And when you look around you, even in research and science, there are a lot of successful researchers who come from very humble background. They didn't have resources, but they went on winning MacArthur Fellowships or Nobel Prizes. So personally, I believe like it's important to stay humble because I believe in my success. If people were not there, I wouldn't be here. And I don't think life, I don't categorize events in life or experiences in life as a success or failure. I just think it is a part of a journey, and all of that are experiences. So even if things don't go the way I thought about, they will go. It's not a failure. It's just the process because I know eventually I will get there. And even things people call success, but how do you define success, right? Like money or some Nature publications or some prizes. It's very hard to define success. So for me, the experience that I get while going through the process is the most important thing, because I grow every day as a human being. And if I don't grow as a human being, then other successes or failures, they don't matter much.
It's a really nice way of phrasing it. I know you just said you don't like to classify things as successes or failures, but what it sounds like we've just presented is like one success after another, right? So just for everyone who's listening, if I asked you to share a moment in your life till now that you would maybe consider a failure that was, or a very low point or a negative point, what would that be and why?
Well, I faced a lot of so-called failures in my own life because, as I said, I come from background where, like, small town, not much access to resources. So figuring out things on my own, sometimes you end up going in totally wrong direction. That is depressing because you don't know, you have eager to do things, you have right attitude to doing things, but you just don't have resources or information sometimes that will guide you to go in direct right way. Mm-hmm. So that can be frustrating a lot of times. In research, of course, I mean, so many times you can define failure as, oh, your paper is getting rejected or you're not, your experiments are not working and so on. But I think life is more than that. And even in sports, like, I can give you two examples in sports. Like, sure. We are playing championships and we lost finals consecutive 2 years. Mm-hmm. But when you lose, there is one rule that I always followed in my life, and I think a lot of professional players, they follow it, that when things don't go the way you plan, you go back to fundamentals and you work on fundamentals and then you come back. But at that time, when you're hitting the low point in your life, you don't think about it as a low point. What you do is you go and think about points when you were doing good. And then you follow that routine, the routine that you used to follow when you were so-called successful or when you're doing good. Mm-hmm. Because it's very important, like half of the time, sports or life is run by your attitude and your emotional intelligence or emotional strength rather than the resources or anything around you. So if you are strong emotionally and you can train your mind to work in certain direction with discipline, then I think you can you can believe that when things are wrong, you can get them right over the period of time.
Got it. So one of the things that I really appreciated when I met you and when I got the chance to work with you is how much you cared about younger students and wanting to do outreach, being a mentor, making sure that you gave back to this pipeline that pushed you this far. Right? Especially since you have a lot more experience than some of the new first year grads that are coming into the Media Lab program. So why is that something that's important to you, and why is that something you care about?
It goes back to from where my journey started. Like, as I said, I came here because I happened to read this Amar Bose's interview. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very touched by that because MIT as a school, but he was not just an engineer. He was not just an entrepreneur. He was also a great student, a great teacher. And one of the great things about his teaching was that he could take the theory and explain it in such elegant ways that people can relate with the practical aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And another role model of mine, APJ Abdul Kalam, who was president of India and a scientist.
Yeah.
While growing up, I always wanted to, becoming a professor was my dream. And then I came here in the United States because it's amazing country and there are so many great science happening here, mm-hmm. which had like a lot of inspiration for my own journey. And since the last 2 years, I have been mentoring students now who went on starting their graduate schools or undergraduate school at mm-hmm. top schools like Carnegie Mellon or UC Berkeley or Stanford. So my goal in life is not just advanced science, but also mentor students so that they can take these ideas and go to the rest of the world and solve real societal problems. So I'm very passionate about passing knowledge to other students and mentoring them, and I'm always available for that. So because that's mission of my life. I had a great job on Wall Street, but I left that. I had a good salary. I left that just because I wanted to come back to academia and continue my journey as a professor.
Whoa, let's talk about that for a second. So that's a piece that kind of got left out of the story. So you used to be on Wall Street, and something drove you to come back here to academia. So what about academia? What do you find meaning in academia? Is basically what I wanted to know.
Sure. I was very happy working in the industry. But one thing I always missed is interacting with students, mentoring them and doing research that can help society. And MIT is a place where we can think about problems which are harder, which we can spend our time working on, and which has an impact on people's daily lives. So as engineers, how can we think about accomplishing that? It's very hard to do that in industry where your goals are different, but it's easy when you're in academia and you're in touch with great minds who are coming from different part of the world. So that's a great thing about MIT's diversity, that people bring with their experiences, with their lives and their stories. So it's very inspiring place. And for outside world, people may think like MIT people are great in math, but it's not just that. People are great in music, people are passionate about photography, writing, literature, and they are very involved into what's happening in our world right now. So I think I'm very fortunate to come back and continue my journey. Yeah,
That's awesome to hear. You don't hear many people leaving, you know, high-paying Wall Street jobs to come back and really follow their passion. So I think that's really inspirational. Another thing I wanted to ask is actually a sentiment that opened the show. We played a song that was all about motherland and homeland. And it's from a movie where there's an actor who goes back to his homeland to do some work, some community service-related work. So especially for many of us that are first-generation Indian-American kids, we've grown up here. Is sort of keeping in touch with your roots or thinking about your traditions, is that something that's important to you and why?
I think the way I think about it is like I've been doing a lot of volunteering work and thinking about how can we use technology for betterment of society. Mm-hmm. That's not just in my homeland, but also in the United States, because I was a part of Big Brothers, Big Sisters organizations. I used to volunteer for them. So at Carnegie Mellon, we had 100 Robots for 100 Kids program.
Wow.
Started by one of the graduate students. So I volunteered for that, teaching math and robotics to students. So my passion is always about connecting to communities, whether it's in my own country or whether it's in United States. I think there are so many problems that technology can help solve. However, we miss the big picture and we think computers will solve the problems related to literacy. Or if you donate computers to some town, that will help rise the improve the education.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you donate computers but town doesn't have electricity because of some policy reasons or some other reasons?
Right.
So I think it's, as a researcher or engineer, it's great to have a tunnel vision which is focused on your research, but sometimes it's also good to have a big picture idea, like what's happening in the world around us and how can we build technologies and policy solutions and economic solutions. Then those technologies will be useful for the grassroots level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what opens up the opportunity to go in various parts of the world, including India or Africa, and do projects which will help local communities. And then when you're doing those projects, take knowledge at MIT and inspire other students in that part of the world, because I didn't have access to these students, but now people from all over the world, wherever we travel to India, they can connect to us, talk to us, learn from our experiences, and that's a great opportunity for those kids to get inspired and see how cutting-edge science and research has been done. So
nice. So that's almost like a nice call to action. Is that something that students can do apart from their normal education and classes, is try and be a part of these initiatives maybe, to sort of reach outside of their school walls and into their communities. As we're getting close to the hour here, some fun questions to lighten things up a little bit. So if I asked you to share with me one moment from your life that you'll cherish for all of your life, what would that moment be?
I think one moment I can say when I was mentoring students and they succeed, that gave me huge pleasure and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
I I believe that was very emotional and touching, because I was able to create environment and create processes around them from which they can learn things, and then use that to go somewhere else and be successful in their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
So inspiring them and helping them to achieve their own dreams was very touching for myself. So if I cherish anything in my life, that it would always be helping others to succeed, because I personally would like to be remembered as a good teacher or a good mentor. So
I can vouch for that for everyone who's listening to this. It's one of the earliest papers that I wrote coming here to the MIT Media Lab. I didn't really know how to write a paper in this space, and so I sort of sat down with Neil, and he went over every revision, multiple versions of it, and finally helped me submit it. So I'm grateful for that, and I'm glad that that's something that drives you in life. This is a fun question that I like to ask people on the show. So if the final pages of your autobiography, somebody was writing this, suppose, it ended with a favorite quote, a favorite dialogue from a movie, a favorite line from a song, or even a favorite scene from some other book, what would it be? Could you share that with us?
That's interesting question. I will approach it by two ways. First is very personal, which comes from movie 8 Below, a story about 8 dogs who go to Antarctica. And in that movie, there is one famous dialogue which I really like, and which I might have taken a lot of inspiration in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, you have to take chances for things you care about. It's something that I would definitely like to see there. The other one is much more broader for entire humanity, or considering all the things happening around us in today's life. That is a poem from Rabindranath Tagore, who is a Nobel laureate. So the poem is, Where the Mind is Without Fear. And I would like to read it if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, great. So it goes like this. Where the mind is without fear and the head is held high, where knowledge is free, where the world has not been broken up into fragments by narrow domestic walls, where words come out of from the depth of truth, where tireless striving stretches its arm towards perfection, where the clear stream of reason has not lost its way into the dreary desert sand of dead habit, where the mind is led forward by thee into ever-widening thought and action, into that haven of freedom, my father, let my country away. So he said that in 1900s when India was under the British Raj, but today, instead of saying, let my country awake, we can say, let this world awake. So
can you sort of interpret that a little bit? There are a lot of ideas in there. So why is that so meaningful to you?
Because as an educator or as a researcher or a scientist, we need to put our thoughts in front of public without any fear. We need to be brave when we put our scientific perspective to the world, because every scientist, his goal is search for truth.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot search for truth when you are feared. When somebody tells you to say something and you say just because that person is telling you to do so, or that government tells you, or so many other things which can force you to say something just because sake of saying. So the poem is more about philosophy. You can say like he thought about open source philosophy at that time, where he says knowledge is free. Right, and then open source movement came. So we all believe in this philosophy at MIT. Like, we believe in educating, teaching others, and so many things that he expresses.
Got you. That's a really beautiful poem, and it's actually one that I like a lot as well. So last thing before I wrap up, if I would just ask you in one sentence or two sentences to leave a sort of message of inspiration behind for younger students, for those of us that are maybe even trying to follow in your footsteps in our own fields, what would that be? And we'll close up with that.
I think don't follow anybody. Create your own path. Admire people. Learn from their life. Learn from their mistakes or successes. But take chances for things that you care for, and while doing so, things will go wrong, because if you're doing something inspirational, you're going to face a lot of resistance, but be ready for that, because if you want to do something great, you have to believe in your dreams and keep walking, because someday success will come. So there is a saying in the United States that says, if you wait in the barber shop for longer, eventually you will get haircut.
That's amazing. So create your own path, take the chance, take the risk, go forward and follow your dreams. That's amazing. Thank you, Neil. Thank you for being on the episode today. And that's it for this week's episode, folks. So next time, we'll have another person, another beautiful outlook on life, and another post-it note to add to our collection on our wall. Until then, look a little harder, dig a little deeper, and search for the story underneath. And who knows? You might just be surprised. This is Aishwarya signing off from WMBR Cambridge. Good night.
सारे सुख है बर से पर दूर तू है अपने घर से. And that was Post-It Wall, which will be back two Wednesdays from today at 7:30 p.m. Hope you enjoyed the show. For now, my name's Tim. This is Slow and Unsteady. I'm going to start off the show with some Regina Spektor. Enjoy.
Some days aren't yours at all. They come and go as if they're someone else's days. They come and leave it behind someone else's face. And it's harsher than yours and colder than yours. They come in all quiet, sweep up, and then they leave. And you don't hear a single floorboard creak. They're so much stronger than the friends you try to keep.